And in our second hour, we have Ole Damgaard, who is in Spain. I have to tell you, this has been pre-recorded. We were going to run it or air it the other week, and we had his previous one. We were in Mercury retrograde, and it was all messed up, but this is the right one. So here's Ole. Hello again, and welcome to Feed Your Head. Tonight we have back Ole Damgaard, and I'm Damgaard, I'm so sorry, Ole. And his website is lightonconspiracies.com. This man is fascinating. He has spent almost three decades researching facts. So, Ole, I'm so glad to have you back.
The honor is mine.
And we only touched you mentioned, but we couldn't get into it last time, Operation 40. And as I told you, I'm not sure if I'd ever even heard of it until you mentioned it. If I had, it hadn't clicked. But do you want to tell us, what is Operation 40?
I tell you, you're not the only one who hadn't heard it, because it used to be a super secret group that was, if I go back in history, it was a group that was created under the surveillance of President Dwight Eisenhower. He, at that time, they had a lot of problems with Fidel Castro had just overtaken Cuba, and they wanted to get rid of the beard. They were really eager to get rid of him. So he gave his vice president, Richard Nixon, the task of putting together a special team of assassins. This started out with between 40 and 80 people, most of them exiled Cubans that had been in the military, air force, or police force under Fidel Castro and Batista on Cuba, and then had escaped from Cuba and came to Miami. And there they were recruited by people from the CIA, who was put in charge of this group. The aim was to put together a very lethal weapon that could be used against other international leaders and presidents or whatever enemy that they had problems with. So they were trained in all kinds of assassinations. They were trained with explosives, with you name it, any type of way to eliminate people. And like I said, they were... In the beginning, they were aimed at Fidel Castro, and they made several attempts on his life. But then when suddenly after the Cuban Missile Crisis, when Kennedy came to a point where he was sitting with a finger on the button, almost being the one that started a world nuclear atomic war, I think that was like a wake-up call for JFK, who at that point had not really understood what he was really... the name of the game on what was on at stake, you know. And after that, where people who were there said that he sat with tears in his eyes and with a finger more or less at the button and just saying, I refuse to be the one that does this to the world. After that point, suddenly he started from being a very easily maneuvered president that the military complex and the global elite could sort of push around the way they wanted it. Mm-hmm. Suddenly he became a very, very strong individual who was who aimed at, you know, he wanted to crush the CIA in 1,000 pieces. He wanted to dismantle the Federal Reserve and get the money printed interest-free for the people to get out of this strangulation that this super illegal Federal Reserve is putting on the American people. And internationally as well. He wanted to withdraw from the Vietnam War and so on. There were many, many different reasons why they wanted him out. So this Operation 40 was aimed, they just changed they aimed this cannon at Kennedy instead. And he was in Dealey Plaza that day. It was just filled with members from this Operation 40. I can go into great detail if you want. Where many of the people in the assassination team were members from this team, combined with people from the mafia, from the Secret Service, the Well,
big name people.
Massive people. And one thing that is really very important to point out as well is that the person that they put in charge of the funding of this group, the guy who funneled the money from oil tycoons in Texas, the oil barons from the military-industrial complex, from different big corporations who were thrown out from Cuba and also having big problems with Kennedy. The man that was put in charge to do that was a young man by the name of George Herbert Walker Bush, who came from, his father was Prescott Bush, who was the guy who funded Hitler and other sides. He was almost charged with treason for doing that, but he was just the elite's money guy who was doing that. And Prescott Bush was also the one that got Dwight Eisenhower up in the where he got elected for president. He was also the mentor for Nixon and so on. So these people have been following each other long before these events that happened later on. So George Bush Sr. was actually the paymaster of this group, and he was in Dealey Plaza as well. He was inside the Deltex building when the shots were fired, together with one shooter, one spotter, and Johnny Rosselli, who was the middleman between the mob and the government and the elite, the Chicago mob.
Right.
So...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so in this group we had these very skilled killers. Like I say, most of them were exiled Cubans. And then they were controlled and maneuvered by a group of people from the CIA. There were people like Ted Shackley. He was also known as the Blonde Ghost. Super central in assassinations all over the place, all over the globe. Super, super central. We had E. Howard Hunt, who was the same. He was one of these his colleagues, and also he pops up everywhere. He was also the leader of the burglars in the Watergate burglary, where they were trying to get rid of evidence that connected Nixon to the Kennedy assassination. That was the reason for that burglary. Then you had another man called David Attlee Phillips, who was later the top chief for the CIA for the Western Hemisphere when it came to black operations, dirty trick operation and propaganda. And this David Attlee Phillips, he went under several different aliases. He was known as Howard Benson. Morris Bishop was another name. But this guy was actually the handler, you know, the controller, the CIA controller of Lee Harvey Oswald, the pointed out patsy for the killing of JFK. But he was also the handler of James Files, who was the shooter at the grassy knoll behind the picket fence. There was a whole range of shooters in Dealey Plaza this day. He was caught in triangular fire between different firing teams. I can name them all if you want later on, but James Files, he was the one who has confessed to firing the final headshot from the right front, just behind the picket fence. And he was the controller, and he was also later the controller of a man called Michael Vernon Townley, who became a very sinister assassin who was used in big time in Operation Condor, where they were overtaking Salvador Allende in Chile. With Operation Condor, later they tracked down and killed a lot of exiled Chilean politicians and people that was anti the Pinochet regime that the elite had put there instead. And this team in Dealey Plaza moved around doing, like they blew up Orlando Letier in Washington, D.C., in Embassy Row. There was a car bomb there that blew up. The bomb was supplied by an exiled Cuban from the Operation 40. His name was Orlando Bosch. He was responsible for hundreds and hundreds of these bomb terror acts over the years. And finally, in the end, after being put to prison, he was pardoned by no one else than George Herbert Walker Bush. The bomb to that, it was supplied by James Files. Now we're talking about this bombing in Washington, D.C. of Orlando Letier. The bomb was supplied by James Files, who was the shooter in Dealey Plaza. And the other people who were part of that assassination was part of the, they were in Dallas that day as well. Then you have a man called David Morales. He was way up there in the CIA. He was in Dealey Plaza, very, very violent person who was, he was later called the head hitman in South America, Latin America. And he was, like I say, in Dealey Plaza. He was also at the Ambassador Hotel, being part of the group that took out Robert Kennedy years later. He was also the guy who, he was actually the guy who shot Che Guevara and killed him in Bolivia. The guy who was in charge of that operation, chasing down Che Guevara, who was one of, which I would say, a colleague of Fidel Castro, the guy who was in charge of that operation was a man by the name of Felix Rodriguez. Felix Rodriguez is super central in the Iran-Contras affair scandal, where he was working side by side with Oliver North. So he was the one tracking down Che Guevara and ordered the killing. But Felix Rodriguez was also George Herbert Walker Bush right hand when it came to funding Operation 40, right from the beginning in the very early 1960s, and continuing way up. I mean, many of these people, of these members, if they're not dead, some of them are still active to this very day, you know, up in their 70s and 80s.
That was what amazed me. You said before, when you were on, that it's like these people don't retire. I mean, they... Tell me, Ole, because I can't seem to get it. Now, I do understand, even though I don't agree, but when they started out with exiled Cubans who were not happy with Castro, but being a fan of, the revolution and all there, I would disagree with them, but they were there, and so they had their own beef. So they were in Miami, but... They were recruited then by the CIA, but then other people came in, and some of these men, I mean, they must just be evil kinds of people because, I mean, they continued. It wasn't like just for one cause. It wasn't just one thing. The Operation 40 people tried in many different guises to assassinate Fidel Castro, and it never worked. But it wasn't just that, because they branched out, just like you're saying, with Kennedy's assassination, South America, they got involved in Chile. I mean, they were just bitter, mean people somehow. Am I right? Or were they being blackmailed? Did they actually believe in what they were doing? Were they doing it for money? What kept this organization going?
I tell you, I think they were just... skilled people, you know, and their business was death, and they were used because they were very good at what they were doing. They were disciplined. They were trustworthy. Some of them had a high moral codex, if you can say that. You know, they saw. I think many of them have seen themselves as freedom fighters, even though I can't really see what the glory of being a freedom fighter if you blow up an Cuban airliner killing 73 innocent people. I can't see the honor in doing things like that, but they themselves have seen themselves as men of honor and so on. So it's just a very twisted way of seeing it, in my opinion. But the reason why they've been used over and over again is just because they've been really good at what they're doing.
Right. Okay, and they're willing because
And also, sorry if I interrupt you, but the problem was that in the early 1960s they were going to invade Cuba, And the whole operation was, they were trained very hard for this invasion. And it came to this very famous Bay of Pigs fiasco, where they tried to invade Cuba. But right at the point where they were waiting for air support, the air support was called on standby. They were withdrawn. So these people, these freedom fighters, were left on their own, and many of them murdered and tortured to death and killed on the streets and put as prisoners and so on. And these exiled Cubans blamed Kennedy, JFK, for having been the one who canceled the air support. And for that, they hated the guy. They really hated him. So that was why they wanted to take him out big time. So they were very easy to persuade to take part in that assassination.
Okay, that makes sense, because that they took very personally.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But after that, they've been used, you know, they were used in parts of hit on the Dominican Republic, the president there. They were part in, some of them were in Rhodesia, in South Africa. They, like this Michael Van Townley I mentioned before, he's part in a big political assassination in South Africa by a man called Robert Smith. He and his wife were murdered there. They tried to kill a man, a Chilean exile in Italy, Vernon Layton, when his wife, they were shot down. They both survived, though. And they just kept on. And this Michael Van Townley was actually present in Stockholm as well when the Swedish Prime Minister was shot down 23 years after Dealey Plaza. And, you know, like if you go in Dealey Plaza, for instance, like I say, I can name the most of the shooters, but also there's this, do you know the Black Umbrella Man? There was one guy in Dealey Plaza with a black umbrella, and there's been a lot of speculations why on a sunny day was somebody standing where with a black umbrella. Somebody has said that it was this was a secret weapon that he could shoot arrows with and so on. But the reason why he was standing there was to show the point where the crossfire should take place. You know, since there were so many different shooters, they couldn't have it, since they were going to blame them on one single patsy. They couldn't have people shooting all over the place. So it was like, everybody shoot now. You know, that's why they positioned him right there. His name, as far as I've been able to find out, was Roy Hargraves, who was closely connected. He wasn't really a participant in Operation 40, but he was closely connected. And the guy in front of him, he was standing waving. Sometimes he's called the waving guy. His name was Felipe Vidal Santiago, also close connected to Operation 40. And this Felipe went under the name of Charles Morgan for many years. He worked for a CIA cover company called ITT. And one of the tasks he had for years and years was to recruit new assassins for local hits in whatever country he was in. And in 1985, this Charles Morgan was trying to recruit assassins in Stockholm to take part of the hit on Olof Palme. So we have people, direct connections from Dealey Plaza, going through the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, taking out Robert Kennedy, killing Che Guevara. They took out Paolo Neruda, the Nobel Prize winning poet in Chile as well. You got Uwe Barsel in West Germany and the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme. So they're all connected. And then you got other members like Porto Goss, who was later, not many years ago, was appointed the chief of the head of the CIA under George Bush. You know, so these people, I think it's very important to understand that these white-haired guys that comes on TV from the White House and these other places, they didn't just come from pop-up from absolute nowhere. Many of them have been active, very active, for years and years and years, and have come to that level just because they have dipped their hands in blood and they have been loyal to the cause. Right. And that's where they're now.
I think
it's crucial to understand that the people in so-called power at this point are super, super, super criminal, and they do not want the population's best. They're absolute contrary. So
right.
It's time to take the power back.
Yeah. Well, that these people then that they've that old phrase made their bones. I mean that's what they did that long ago. Now was Operation 40 by that name, and then Operation 7, whatever, was that one of the biggest or earliest CIA operations?
No, God, no. The CIA was actually created under the name of OSS, and the OSS was created by a lot of former Nazis, you know, that was exported. Do you know after the Second World War when the Nazi war machine were defeated officially?
Okay.
We thought, oh, thank God, now the threat is over, we can relax. The thing was, these Nazis, a few of them were sentenced just for, so you know, like a theater for the crowd, but most of them were imported. They exported them from Germany, Nazi Germany, into America and South America, where they were building up the OSS. Alan Dulles, the former chief of the CIA, he was part of Operation Paperclip, where they got all of these super Nazis out of the Nazi Germany into the States and other places, and then build up the CIA. They also built up NASA and other very crucial companies like that with super Nazis and the banking system, and they just infiltrated the whole thing. And also they used these people to train these assassins, like some of the first members of the Operation 40 and so on. They were trained by former Nazi officers, high-ranking officers. And also the whole Stay Behind Gladio movement, the Ghost Army, I don't know if you're aware of that, but which is built up in all NATO countries, in Europe and other places as well, were built up with the help of people like Richard Gehlen, a high-ranking SS officer and so on. So,
what is that, the Ghost Army?
Stay Behind. Stay Behind is a very, very important piece in the job to understand, in the pixel puzzle to understand about. It was in 1947, after the Second World War, where the NSC and the National Security Council, they decided to build a ghost army in all NATO countries. It was supposed to be like a guerrilla movement, an underground guerrilla movement, so that if any country in the NATO alliance would be invaded, at that time it was the threat came from the east, but if the country would be invaded, there would be a secret resistance army already in place. So what they did was that they made thousands of small groups of 8 to 10 people with hidden guns, with hidden fuel depots, food, radio equipment, all of these things spread out in all these countries, so that if the country got invaded, the leadership of that country could just be transported to London, and then the whole resistance would already be in place. So it was an excellent idea.
Okay.
The thing was just that it didn't take that long before the Russian threat wasn't there anymore. And then they had this massive army that nobody knew about that was already in place. So what they came up with was this idea of, they call it the strategy of tension. What they used this army for was to start inflicting fear into normal society. They are responsible for every single one of these so-called terror acts that I've been able to look into. You can track back to this Gladio network. It's they blew up the train stations, they shot people in supermarkets, mass shootings. They've done this for years and years, the whole idea was to get the population in these different countries to go into fear mode and accept more and more right-wing political rule,
right,
and ask for a more and more militant police, a police state, you know, please protect us
right,
from all of these terrorists, they're everywhere. No, they're not, they're from the inside. And many of these assassins that are being used internationally are being picked from this Stay Behind network. Officially, this Stay Behind movement doesn't exist anymore, but I think that is absolute BS. You know, they are there, maybe they changed names, but they're still there and they're active to this very day.
Yeah, it would be very naive to think that they aren't there, because we've learned that once some kind of an operation like that is established, it doesn't just disappear. But sure, they could have changed their names, but the goal is still the same.
It is. They, you know, in every single operation, they call them something else. You know, it's called G2 or ZR rifle or Operation 40. Operation 40 has been named the grandmother of all Black Ops.
Oh.
You know, so that is sort of like the first real one, where it's the one that has been like a template that has been used ever since.
Right, right. So that's where it behooves us to find out about it, because it was like, well, the biggie, like you say, it's a template, and so the people from there. I mean, maybe they say they're not called Operation 40 or Operation 70 or anything like that anymore, but they're still there. Like you're talking, these white-haired men in their 70s and 80s, they're still active.
Yes, some of them are still active. And I know, I mean, there are even, sculptures or statues in Miami of some of them. You got one statue of one of the guys. His name was Nestor Izquierdo. And as far as I know, he was the spotter in the Deltex building from where some of the shots were fired at Kennedy. From the shooter in that building, you know, you have the school book depository, first the Deltex building, then the school book depository, and then the grassy knoll, and then the three bridge underway, or whatever you call it, the bridge there, surrounding Dealey Plaza. And in the Deltex building, this is, as far as I've been able to find out, the shooter was a hitman from the Chicago mob called Chucky Nicoletti, who was there together with a CIA, the liaison between the Chicago mob, the government, and the CIA. His name was Johnny Rosselli.
Right.
And George Herbert Walker Bush was in the same office building. It was one office there. There was a front for the CIA in that building, and they used that office. And then the spotter was a man by the name of Nestor Izquierdo, and there's a statue of him in Miami as one of the freedom fighters.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Do you want me to go over the other shooters in Dealey Plaza?
I wanted... Right before the show, you mentioned something that was new to me, because we were talking a lot about, well, basically the 40 originally were Cubans, and so, you know, it takes us down to the Caribbean, and you mentioned the killing of Bob Marley. Would you explain that a bit?
Yeah, I would like to start with John Lennon first, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Do you know, on the evening when John Lennon came, it's important to understand what was going on at that time, because he was just about to make a major comeback after several years of taking care of his family and so on. And once again, here is a person who is standing up for peace, who is totally against this global elite's agenda, which is the name of the game for them, is death and destruction. That is the name of the game. They do not want peace. They do not want harmony. They don't want all of these things that normal people are craving for.
No.
They want the total opposite.
Right.
And so anyone that stands up and where people really listen to them, like Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, JFK, Robert Kennedy, John Lennon, Bob Marley, Lady Diana, these type of people are the one that becomes a threat to this group. And unfortunately, they have been taken out, many of them, or all of the people I mentioned. So it's a very violent group when it comes to dealing with their problems. Anyway, John Lennon was just about to make his big comeback, and they had planned for a big, big peace tour around the States and other places. And when he came this evening, he came in a limo from the recording studio together with Yoko Ono. The two left the car first. Yoko Ono started walking, and then John followed like 5-6 meters behind her. And the so-called killer was a man by the name of Mark Chapman. He was standing to the right, and John Lennon was walking in to the entrance in this Dakota building in New York, where when he was halfway in there, there were 4 or 5 shots fired, and he fell down, then started crawling into the building, and then afterwards he was taken to the hospital where he was pronounced dead and so on. But when you look at the forensic evidence, all the shots fired at Lennon came straight from the left. I mean, some of them, they were even so close together than that when they did the autopsy, they had problems seeing how many shots were actually fired because they were so close together, some of them. So you had Chapman standing to the right, but the shots were fired from the left. So who was standing at the left would be a good question to ask. And this evening, there was a doorman by the name of Jose Perdomo, who was a nice-looking gentleman in his late 60s, so a bit bald with glasses and nice smile and so on. But when you check this guy out, he disappeared. Just after the assassination, his name was mentioned in one of the first very few broadcasts. That was when I heard it. Then it took like 6, 7, 8 years later, I think it was 7 years later, when it surfaced again. And this Jose Perdomo, for almost 10 years, he was one of the highest-ranking officers in, guess what, Operation 40.
Oh, my God.
So you tell me, how big are the chances? And he was also the guy who went over to Chapman and took the gun from him and said, do you know what you just did? You just shot Lennon. You just shot Lennon. And as far as I know, that was the word that triggered Mark Chapman, you know, because he was one of these MKUltra controlled patsies that they use from time to time. I don't think they ever used them for the assassination themselves because they can't be trusted as skilled killers, but they're used to take the blame for it.
Right.
And they're activated, you know, they split their personality. They put them go through awful, awful experiences, you know, where they split up the personality so that one part of the personality has absolutely no idea what the other one is doing, and they can sort of turn them on and off so they go between different parts of their personality. So one can be part of the assassination. Then when you trigger the other one, he will have absolutely no idea, no memories, no recollection, no emotions, nothing that is connected to the crime itself. And one of the typical things with these people are that they're standing like zombies after the so-called assassination. They're just like zombies waiting to be picked up. And same thing here with Chapman. He was just standing there waiting. They say he was even standing reading a ridiculous book, the same book as John Hinckley was standing reading after, or had they found in his room after the attack on Ronald Reagan. But it's just that they always use this, the lone crazy guy.
Right, right.
You know, the reason why they want him alone is because if there's more than one person involved, if there's two or more, then by law or by legal terms, it's a conspiracy. And if it's a conspiracy, there's always a motive behind it, you know. And then if there's a motive, there's a reason. So they try to blame it on a lone guy, and that he's crazy, because if he's crazy, then he just walked up and shot the guy for no reason whatsoever. So let's just get rid of the patsy, put him in jail, bury him, case closed, goodbye, farewell, let's move on. That's the whole idea. Do not dig into it. Do not look into what was the real reason that whoever was taken out. That's the whole point.
Right, and that the way you just said that was perfect. About the lone person is crazy, two or more is a conspiracy, and a conspiracy means there's a reason. And then it's more like, well, finding out, and you may find out this and that. So you stick with the lone crazy guy.
Yeah, they want case closed as soon as possible, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And that's also why when they do these assassinations, they have their own investigation on standby when it comes to these bigger assassinations, so that it's people that they control themselves, that this investigation is on standby. So when the shots are fired, these people move in right away and knock out all normal, honest, decent police officer and detectives and so on. They push to the side, and then this inside investigation is put there only to put the lid on. You know, do not look into the real truth. They're just put there to point, they went that way, they went that way, they went that, and point at Patsy at all times. So, and also take care of truth seekers like myself. You know, this is why it's very, very dangerous sometimes to be too involved in the official investigation, because they deal with you in not a very nice way.
Yeah. Well, you yourself, you left Northern Europe for the
Northern
southern
Europe.
Part. Yeah.
I had two friends who got murdered, and I had a visit myself, and it's shit scary when you deal with these type of people. So I felt time for me to leave. I don't want to be part of a statistic being found in a bathtub fully dressed, having shot myself from the back with a shotgun, that type of thing.
Right, right. Yeah. No, that had to be scary. I mean, when your friends are murdered and then you have a visit and it's like, okay, I'm on my way.
It's freaking out time, I tell you. Oof.
Yeah.
Because these people, when you see them, I'm not here to point, I'm not here to say people are evil or so on, but I think I was in Iran during the Iran-Iraq war and so on, and I saw some of these people, you know, these like almost like brainwashed killers,
mm-hmm.
who have gone through a lot of horrible things, and it's like, if not, I wouldn't say evil, but there's the light is not there, you know, the light of the spirit is not there. It's just like a cold killing machine, and that is a very scary type of person to come across.
It's very, because you when we meet people just in everyday life, the spark of humanity in each of us, like, it recognizes the other.
Yeah.
You're talking about someone that, like, you can't recognize that. It's not there. Like, they're not making a connection that you are the same as they.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know, I was in Iran. Like I said, I went on a bicycle from Sweden to South Africa. I was supposed to go there. Instead, I ended up in the middle of the war in 1984 in Iran. And one of the things that really shook me, I must say, was to see a country where suddenly people had chosen sides, you know, just like in the Civil War in America, where suddenly brothers could be one brother could be one on one side, the other on the other side, and so on. And when I was there, it was the Khomeini regime, very, very powerful and cruel at that time, and then normal people. And when I saw who chose what side, you know, who was the torturer, who was the one being tortured, who was the one, terrorizing people, who was the one, who was the freedom fighter, and so on. Yeah, I think you're getting to a point there in the States as well where you see people choosing sides, and it's a scary experience to see what part of the personality, if you're weak or if you are power hungry, or if you're open to bribes, or if you're open to personal gain, even though it might be from stepping or killing or hurting other people,
mm-hmm.
it's a very scary experience to see who's who. And I think it's up to all of us to look in the mirror and see what we will do in a situation like that, if we can manage to be courageous enough to stand up for what is true and what is right.
Yes, I think that's very good advice, actually. We need to look in the mirror. We need to do that introspection, because if you're not introspective, you're going to come to a situation that you haven't thought about. You may make a move that would be detrimental, whereas if you would have thought about it, like throw these situations at yourself and think them through now. Now's the time, you're right.
And also, this only continues because we allow it.
Yes.
This is the ridiculous thing, because the global elite, they're only a few thousand, and we're like 7 billion. So it's an absolute joke that we're allowing this to happen. But it's just because people are so asleep, or have been. I mean, there's an enormous awakening going on at the moment. That's why I think the elite are really freaking out. That's also why they're speeding everything up, and they're getting really sloppy and clumsy and, you know, low budget with all these false flag operation and so-called mass shootings that are all fake. You know, just to freak people out, to get them to give up the guns, and so on, blame it on the guns for these mass shootings, so that they can move in with a more or less military overtake. So I just want to point out, I'm absolutely pro-peace, anti-violence. I'm totally against hatred and all of these things. If you study history, Fighting back violently is not the way to do it. It's not the way to do it. The way to go forward is the Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, that way, you know.
But we always have to, you know, mention when we talk about them, because they were definitely peaceful men and they didn't raise arms. However, for their movements to work, other people, their followers, did show violence from time to time.
Of course.
Yeah. You know,
it always happens.
Yeah,
I mean,
it does. It's the way. I wanted to mention that Ole's website is lightonconspiracies.com, and on there you can find out how to help the cause, because Ole is totally... He's not funded by any governments, for sure.
that is true.
You're also doing a fundraising drive. Really, you would like to get some more money. You want to do a documentary. Would you tell us a little bit about the documentary?
Now, one of the aims, since nowadays the visual media is such a good way of reaching people, because not everybody reads books, and I mean, media is so controlled at the time, but documentary is one way where you can really make a massive statement or a revelation of what has been going on. And my part, I think, has been to be able to connect the dots. I don't know how I've got into a position where I've been able to see things that not so many other people have spotted before, but I managed to connect all of these major things from the mid-50s all the way up until today, and connect them to the same group of people using the same assassins and so on. So my aim is to get a high top quality documentary made to very visibly show how this whole thing has been carried out, how we've been duped into believing something else, and how to reveal what is going on, so that we can stand up, wake up, stand in truth and take our personal power back instead of giving it up to this group that is, they're acting totally mad at the moment. I mean, it's what is going on is total madness. And so this would be, I think, a powerful tool that could help people wake up. And my aim is to get, I would very much love to get in, to get this done together with like a documentary filmmaker like John Pilger in Australia or somebody like that on that of that caliber. Very, very brave man, very skilled, very honorable, somebody like that. But the funding is always one of the major things. And what I'm asking for is also just to fund me as a private researcher. I've been doing this for 30 years. I have a family to feed, and it's not easy when you're on your own. I have absolutely no income from this other than support, you know. So any kind of donation is greatly, greatly appreciated. Also, I've just started a monthly newsletter where I'm going to do a lot of interviews myself and get as much top quality information out there as possible. So by signing up for that would also help me. So.
And how do we sign up for that?
It's on my website, lightonconspiracies.com, and the word. The name of the website is not, how shall I say, I put a lot of thought into the domain name because this is exactly light on conspiracies, light into darkness, how to reveal these dark areas that are have been controlling us for such a long time, this hidden hand that nobody has really, everybody has felt its presence, but nobody has really been able to understand what has been going on. So this is, I'm trying to be like a torch that goes into the dark areas without judgment or violent thoughts or hatred, but just exposing it so that it will stop. It's like a cancer growth in a beautiful body, and if we don't expose it, even though it might be painful and smelly maybe, but if we don't expose it, the body will die.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's going on. So it's we're at a crucial time, a beautiful time, I think, because this is when we're now here. When it's happening. So it's an amazing time to be up here. But we need to stand up and wake up. There's no time to put on and watch another football game and pick your nose and think it's I can do it tomorrow. This is not the time to be a coward. This is not a time to be a bum. It is time to stand up, help your neighbor, help your friends, help your family, raise the energy. And by the more you stay in gratitude and positive feeling, the power of love, I'm not talking new age, blah, blah, love, I'm talking the true power of love, which is the highest frequency, that will raise us above this very low frequency of fear that they're trying to push on us from all directions in life. They're really trying to push us down with fear, 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 so that they can control us. So the higher we are in energy, the more difficult it is for us to be controlled. So I would say if you cannot do anything else, then do everything you can to raise your energy. And one of the best ways to raise your energy is by helping someone else, you know. So get out of your sofa, turn off the TV, look around yourself, see that you have a beautiful family, you've got beautiful friends around you, start talking, appreciating them, and help each other, lift it, so that we can start turning this world into this beautiful place it's supposed to be, instead of this awful, dark, controlled terror state that they are trying to push on us.
Right. It's simple but not easy sometimes, because it's simple to see, and because it looks simple, people think it wouldn't work. But you know, we can raise our own vibrations, and we can't raise anyone else's but our own. But the more of us that raise our own, the better. I wanted to ask, you're involved in yoga, aren't you?
Yeah, Raja Yoga, that's yoga for the mind.
Yeah, and because people who are or who have that kind of a background or have some Buddhist thoughts, they sound different, you know, than a lot of other people, because you do talk about the energy, and we know everything is energy. So whether it's positive or negative, that's all up to us. It's energy is there. We make of it what we will.
But you know, like, it's now science. It's I'm not a religious man. I wouldn't say that. But
spirituality are totally different.
That's I think if Jesus came back down here now, he would wear a T-shirt where it said "God save us from religion."
Exactly.
But do you know, like, if you do experiments in a laboratory, for instance, and you have a very high frequency and a very low frequency, and you let the two meet, like the very high frequency representing love and the very low frequency representing fear, which is exactly how they are if you measure them, what happens is the two frequencies, they don't start fighting and meet in the middle, but the lower frequency, when it meets the high one, it just gets annulled. It just disappears, boom, like that. It's just when you turn on the light in a dark room, there's no fight. The light doesn't fight the shadow for it to disappear. It just disappears. And it's the same here. When we raise our frequency, our vibration, and we do that most powerfully by feeling. It's the feelings that are the important one. Feel gratitude, appreciate what you've got around you, feel it. The more you feel it, the more you raise yourself, and the harder it is for them to control you. I tell you, it might sound new age and blah, blah, blah. Try it. It will work. You will see that the whole world around you will slowly change, or not slowly, sometimes very quickly, when you change your frequency, when you change your way of looking, when you come from appreciation, when you come from gratitude, when you look around you and start appreciating what you got, the world around you will change, and you will become inspirational to other people, and then that will help them. So don't focus on everything you can't do.
Right.
Or, yeah. You know the definition of depression? The definition of depression is I, me, and mine. My problems, I have problems, mine is worse than everybody else. That is the downward spiral. So the way to get out of depression is to focus on someone else. Go out, help someone you don't know. Do beautiful things for people without them knowing that you were the one doing it. And then when you help someone else, you feel better.
Yes.
They feel better. People who observe what is going on and see what you're doing, they feel better. So it's spreading.
It's a total win-win-win then. Yeah, I'm one of those people that keeps a gratitude journal, just because.
Excellent.
You know, if I have one of those moments, I can always go to that, and it's like, my goodness, all the things I am grateful for, and I don't know any other way, because I've always loved life.
Mm.
So that doesn't mean that we don't get discouraged sometimes, but our discouragement doesn't last nearly as long as others, I've noticed. We may have one of those days or one of those hours or something, but I don't know. I can't think of my last one. So I really think...
Can I just say, no one has said that this would be an easy trip, you know?
Exactly.
And this is also the thing. Do you know, the Native Indians, they say that we, the people here, and the souls that are here at this time of this exciting time of amazing change,
yes,
we are the chosen of the chosen. We are the strongest of the strong who have chosen to come down here. We've actually been elected by our ancestors. We have been the one handpicked to come down and face these challenges. So this is not a time to wimp out and say, I don't want to be here. I don't. Be honored instead. Feel the strength and power within yourself. And then instead of focusing on everything that cannot be done and how powerful this elite is and how controlled we are, focus on the things you can do, you know, and just, like I say, if you can't do anything else, focus on raising the energy. You know, like if you go down the highway and you come to a toll booth or something like that, pay for the one car that's coming after you, someone you've never seen before. Pay for two people, you know, it's a few, maybe a dollar or something like that.
Yes.
That thing might inspire the person who comes afterwards to do incredible things.
Right.
And it just starts spreading like that. And this is,
well,
this positive power is something that this elite is fearing major.
That's the thing about a smile. When you're walking down the street, like, don't frown at everyone you meet. Smile, you know. Be nice to the people you meet. You may be the only person that gives them a smile today. Somebody, maybe a salesperson or something, they've had a rough day. Be the one. You know, just smile. Say something nice. You don't know how that could affect them because we all make ripples. So I'd rather make the nice ripples than the undertow kind.
But I'm not talking only on a sort of like a light level, you know, just
have a nice,
I know you're not either, but like have a nice day and this type of thing.
Oh, no,
I'm talking about,
that's so fake. No, I hate that.
But what I'm saying is, But what I'm saying is that this is a way to stand up against this elite.
Yes.
You know, we're not talking, this is heavy, heavy, hardcore, power. Love is powerful.
It is.
You know, like Jesus was, he was not just a wimp, you know, he was a real revolutionary, very, very courageous, standing up for love and what is right, and this is what we need now. You know, all of us to stand up to this. And the thing is that, well, you know the Wizard of Oz?
Mm-hmm.
You know the story where Dorothy and the other, they're going to this major castle, mansion or whatever, and there's they come in there and this powerful voice just screaming at them, you know, I'm powerful and you are weak, you know, like this, fear me, fear me, fear me. And they could very well, you know, like throw themselves to the floor and start whimpering and all this, but they don't. They dare to stand, and then when they dare to stand up, even though they're being scared, they suddenly discover this electric cord growing in under behind a curtain or something like that. And they go and have a look. And behind the curtain, there's this little old guy with a microphone and a massive amplifier. That is the elite. They're a bunch of old guys with a massive war machine. And but like I say, it's just a lot of noise and sound if we stand up, if we stand in our own power and dare and just say we're not going to accept this anymore. Because the mad thing is that we are controlling ourselves.
Yes, yes.
This is the sick
thing. We make it easy for them.
Without us, they can't do it.
Yeah, but we just fall into those those patterns of thinking that we have no power.
But we have.
We do.
We do.
Thank you, my friend, so very, very much. LightOnConspiracies.com. You can find out how to make donations. You can find out about the coming documentary. And help Olay out. He is getting the truth out, trying to help us wake up. My friend, thank you so much for coming on.
The pleasure is mine, Ruthann. Anytime, I'm here. Whatever it takes, I'm here.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.